Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Radio Free Nintendo, courtesy of NintendoReport.com. I'm your host, Carl Castaneda, and to my left, Mike Sklens.
Hello, everybody.
And across the internet, all the way in Oregon, Evan Birchfield.
Yeah, it's not Oregon, but I guess that's all right.
I'm never going to pronounce it that way,
because
it's wrong.
Hey, speaking of Oregon, are you happy about the Ducks?
Yes, actually. I was actually, for once, watching a football game, and I was very pleased to see that we beat Arizona State. Why are we talking about this? I'm sorry. I don't actually have any knowledge about football. It's not
because I only mentioned it because I wanted to bring up that my Florida State Seminoles upset number 2 Boston College this weekend.
P.S. Okay. Boston, suck it.
Yeah. So Boston's magical season of sports is over.
Oregon Ducks were only defeated once so far this season, whereas Arizona State was undefeated. So we beat them, so that means that we're on our way to good places. So,
yeah.
Right. Well, so this win against Boston actually guarantees us a bowl, even if it's a crappy bowl, so awesome.
So Emerald Nuts Bowl.
So great. Yes. So Radio Football Report.
We have to at least mention the Noles once a week or people will stop hating us. And we can't have that.
We really don't want that. Yeah, I'm sorry to participate in that. I'm sorry.
All right, well, let's move on into new business. And Mike, you were playing Thrillville Off the Rails.
Yeah, I got Thrillville Off the Rails in the mail today. And the way I would best describe it is like it's a game like Theme Park or Roller Coaster Tycoon, except it's those if you were developmentally challenged. It's so watered down. You build a ride and just instantly starts churning money into your bank account. Like there's no economic thinking required for the game. You just build something and you start making more money, and then you build something else and you start making even more money. There's no balance of like, now I have to pay all these people to do all these things, and oh no, this ride's breaking down a lot, and oh, you know, people aren't satisfied enough, and there's not enough economic simulation in the game.
So it's kind of like that episode of South Park where Cartman buys a theme park and everything just magically becomes being insanely profitable for no reason at all.
Yeah. Okay. But it is billed as the sequel to the number one family game of 2006, so that should tell you exactly how challenging it is.
What's the number one family game of 2006?
I guess it was Thrillville, the original.
That's ridiculous.
Thrillville on the rails. Let's take it crazy this time.
The prequel.
The prequel.
Yeah, it says sequel to the number one original family game of 2006.
Does it say who gave it number one?
Asterisk. Claim is based on sales data for 2006 as reported by the NPD Group.
Well, I still think that's a crock, but whatever.
Does the NPD Group say this, separate what's a family game and what isn't?
I guess it does.
That's weird.
I don't know about that. I mean, I'll bet that they just looked at the numbers and they're defining family game however they want to define it. So
yeah, I guess so. I'm sure... I haven't played it, but I'm sure there's no way that EA's Theme Park DS could be any worse than Thrillville Off the Rails.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, besides that, any other new business, guys?
I've spent most of today playing Alien Soldier for the Virtual Console. I don't really want to get... I don't know. I don't
too
know how...
It.
I don't know how people are going to react to my review. It hasn't been posted yet. It's getting posted. We're recording this on Monday, so it hasn't been posted. It will get posted probably about 9 or 10 my time. And I'll be sure to check reactions, but let me just say that I think it is a very good game. And that's
Evan
all it
Birchfield
is.
Evan Birchfield writes a controversial article. Get out of town.
I'm really not trying to be controversial, but I know someone's going to nitpick because I'm my penchant for hyperbole is at full force in that article. So
actually, right before we recorded this, I was down at Best Buy trying out the Rock Band demo. And it's like it's super, super, super plus awesome.
Super awesome.
And I also got to try out the Guitar Hero 3 demo. Not on the Wii, I tried it on the Xbox, but it's really the same game on all the platforms.
Yeah.
And
basically,
I played Guitar Hero 3 with a friend recently, and I like that guitar way better than the 360 one.
I'm not digging the Les Paul guitar at all compared to the Rock Band Stratocaster.
Oh, well, I'm sure. I'm sure that Harmonix has done a better job.
Look at it this way. The Stratocaster is about maybe a half or maybe even a third as thick as the Les Paul is. It's really thin.
Really?
The Les Paul is really thick. It's like a whole inch and a half of body on there. It's just... And the buttons are soft, and I don't know, I just couldn't get a feel for it. The Stratocaster feels incredible.
But see, I like the soft buttons on the Les Paul compared to the original 360 controller, which I thought was
terrible.
Oh, the
Explorer is no good. The Explorer is no good.
That was terrible.
The Les Paul is nowhere near as good as the Gibson SG.
So did you only play guitar on Rock Band? Is that the only thing you got to try?
No, they had the microphone was broken, unfortunately, so I couldn't test out my beautiful crooner voice. But I did try out the drums, and the bass pedal is automatic in the demo version, so you don't have that extra coordination of needing to hit the bass pedal, which obviously is where the real challenge of the drums comes in. But the as far as everything else, the drums are really, really fun.
Wow. Something that you guys, I need to let you know, is that I have been practicing the lyrics and singing of Sabotage by Beastie Boys.
And
there will be a YouTube video for that very soon.
Do you have a 360, Evan?
No, I have lots of music-loving friends who have 360s. So Rock Band will be in my life. And
are you going to be the singer in your band?
What we're going to do is we'll probably have everybody do some singing because the guy who's playing the drums is a singer, and I think there's only three of us right now, so we might always have to have one person who's on an instrument singing.
Well, no, your band can have as few as two people in it, and the rest will be automatically
played. Sure, yeah, I know. I'm just saying that if anybody wants to sing, they'll probably be playing an instrument as well. Unless it gets too hard, which I've heard it does. Chris Kohler had a whole post on it where he said if you don't know the words, then you're not going to get through the singing part if you're playing an instrument as well. So, that's why I'm practicing.
I actually just today volunteered to guest sing in Mike's band.
He's going
to
be our backup singer in our band that has no name yet.
Yeah, awesome. So perhaps a competitive YouTube video will be released.
We shall see. We shall see.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that Sabotage is pretty much the thing that is, I don't know, I think that's the song that defines me the most as a person. So that's why I want to sing that one and get that one on the internet for the whole world to see.
So. Evan's going to play Sabotage at his wedding.
That's going to be my first dance. We'll see. The thing about that is that the internet really, this is really exposing just my level of self-promotion, how such a total jerk I am. Because really I find that I see me making an idiot of myself singing Sabotage as kind of just an advertisement for my my reviews on Nintendo World Report and my blog. So
it's a career move, basically.
It really is. It really is. I feel like if you have to get famous, if you want to get famous on the internet, you have to make fun of you. You have to do something really, really stupid. And I'm not going to cry about Britney Spears. And I'm not going to sing a stupid pop song. And I'm not going to put Mentos in a Coke bottle. So what am I going
to
do?
I saw a video of a guy today who manages to play pop songs on a guitar, a keyboard, and a drum set at the same time all by himself.
Yuck.
He uses his right hand to play the keyboard. He plays the guitar with his left hand up on the frets, and he has a drumstick tied to the neck of the guitar, and he hits the cymbals, and he uses his feet to play. He's got a kick pedal on a bass drum, and he's got another kick pedal on a snare drum, and he uses his feet to play the drums, and he uses the neck of the guitar to hit the cymbals.
Wow.
It's amazing. And one of the songs he does is a Legend of Zelda theme, so, yeah.
So, he's an uber nerd. That's awesome.
Yeah. Incredible. I mean, it was, like, so impressive.
So that's on YouTube, and I can go look at that.
Yeah.
We will check it out later, for sure.
Yeah,
Moving on into our community segment. First up, Mike's Crazy Mailbag. Go for it, Mike.
Our question this week from Nick, he asks, what is the most awesome food? And the answer, Nick, is burritos. The answer is burritos, specifically from Qdoba Burritos, because they gave me two burritos for free tonight.
Uh-huh.
I got a buy one get one free coupon on the mail, so I go down there and I'm like, oh, I'd like two burritos, and I've got a buy one get one free coupon. And the girl working the register is like, oh, okay, do you have a Qdoba card? And oh, I do have a Qdoba card. I haven't been here in months, but I'd forgotten that I had one, so I dug around in my wallet and I found my like Qdoba points card thing, and she swipes it, and it turns out I had a free burrito earned on that card, so I got two burritos for the price of none.
Okay, well, now, I can understand why you're saying that a food that is free is going to be the most awesome food.
But in addition, burritos are completely awesome.
Okay, they're legitimately awesome. I will give you that. But here's what I'm trying to say, is that if food is always free, eventually it becomes much less awesome. In fact, the inverse becomes true.
If all food was free, burritos would still be awesome.
Well, no, here's what I'm saying, man. I worked at Quiznos, okay, and when I was getting free meals all the time from Quiznos, even though there's a ton of things on the menu. Salad, sandwiches, soup, crackers.
You can make your own thing up, too.
And I can make my own thing. Eventually, I pretty much wanted to pay for it because I knew that if I paid for it, I'd like it just a little bit more than getting it for free.
Well, that's different, though. That's when you're stuck and you're only getting free sandwiches every day. Like, I used to work in a movie theater and I don't eat popcorn anymore as a result. Because you go home smelling like it and it's disgusting.
Yeah.
But this is different. This is, you know, free burritos, and this is not an everyday sort of thing. And if every item of food in the world was free, burritos would still be awesome because all the food would be on the same playing field.
Okay, well, then maybe you have a point there. I don't know if it has any real validity. So,
all right, Evan, what is the most awesome food in your world?
Marfar chicken.
Really?
Marfar chicken, yes, with pink sauce. By the way, it's something you probably don't have on the East Coast at all.
No, we call it gut sauce here because it's made by this place called Guthrie's.
Okay, what is it? What is it like?
This is a mayo ketchup mix with like a whole lot of spice and pepper in it.
Okay, ours is not spicy or peppery. Ours is very sweet and sugary, and it is a delicacy, an absolute like it is famous in my region only. If I go up north to Portland, when I'm up there, I can't get pink sauce. Only in Southern Oregon can you
down
get
here,
it.
Yeah, down here, pink sauce, or gut sauce, as it's commonly referred to in Tallahassee, is a ketchup mayo mix loaded with a ton of pepper.
Okay.
It's really good. I had some first time in the day. And well, I was actually with Mike and Dormer, and we had it, and it was fucking great.
What especially we should do when you're drunk. We should get an exchange going.
Well, I'm underage, so
I'll ship you some.
I was
some.
Drunk. You were drunk. Listen, you know, I don't think the gut sauce is gonna make it to Oregon without like exploding or combusting along the way.
You can't even leave it like out overnight. I did that. I brought some home. I left it out because you told me that if I put it in the freezer or if I put it in the refrigerator, it would go bad. So I was like, all right, I'll just leave it out. I'm gonna get up in like 6 hours.
No, I think
we
told you the opposite. That if you put it out, it would be bad. If you left it in the freezer, it might survive an overnight.
Oh
maybe.
Well, then it didn't work out because when I looked at it in the morning, it was like beet red.
It changes color from like
see,
a light.
See, our sauce
to total
does
red.
Not have that problem. So. Anyways,
well, ours is pretty much pure fat.
Yes. Well, maybe I'll just have to come to Florida sometime then.
Yeah,
perhaps.
Perhaps.
But as for the most awesome food in my world, I'm an easy guy. I just like pizza.
Wow, boy.
I'm sorry. I go for favorites.
Why do you get to host the podcast if you're that boring? I don't get it.
It's my crazy mailbag, not yours.
Yeah. It's Mike's crazy mailbag, not Carl's.
And it's Carl's boring mailbag. Jeez.
Yeah. As for Carl's boring mailbag, a.k.a. listener mail, we have a very interesting question here from Pete, who says, the writer's strike in Hollywood seems like it'll have some major repercussions. What do you think would happen if programmers in America tried the same thing?
Well, let's give you some little backstory first, in case you're not aware of the writer's strike that's going on. Today's Monday, and it is the first day of the Writers Guild of America's strike. They've been in negotiation with the studios over rights for things like DVDs, because right now the people who write the television shows only get a small, very extremely small fraction of the money from DVD sales, and they get absolutely no money from online distribution like iTunes and Xbox Live Marketplace. So they want to renegotiate their contracts because they feel that content distribution is moving to these venues, you know, on demand and iTunes and DVD, and it's moving away from broadcast television, so they're not going to make as much money off their standard residuals, and they're going to be in the poorhouse because the studios are going to be getting rich off all these iTunes downloads that they literally aren't seeing a single penny from. Mm-hmm. So they tried negotiating this, and they've tried and tried and tried for weeks and weeks and weeks, and they finally halted negotiations last night, and at midnight the Writers Guild went on strike.
Well, I don't have any real opinion about the writer's strike, but I do want to say that if there's anybody who is mistreated in the entertainment industry, it is programmers over and above the writers of television and movies. So
the programmers aren't getting residuals, you know, from games or anything.
No, and the way that video games are marketed and handled, I don't even think that there's any sort of guild for that kind of thing. If you're the guilds are for the actors who record their voices, and if you're in the writer's guild, I don't even know if that applies to video games if you happen to write the scenario. So really, anything that you're contributing, you're getting a flat fee for. So yeah. I don't know if I've got an opinion on the unionization of that, or if programmers need that, but if programmers tried to organize, we might see the cost of games go up. because of the unionization of the programming. We also might see the development of games shift a little bit, which I think wouldn't be a bad thing, because right now we've got overworked employees, and we hear that mm-hmm. happening all over the place. Like, it was a huge deal when they just started paying programmers overtime for staying late, like
which
working
they should have been getting.
16-hour yeah. days just to get a game finished by deadline. That's ridiculous and maybe inhumane, but they're getting a good salary, but nonetheless, I think that I don't know if games would be affected by it horrendously. I do think that, the cost of our already very expensive medium might go up. At the same time, a reorganization of the development cycle might solve some of those problems.
Yeah. It would certainly be very interesting if the programmers unionized. I'd like to see how it would turn out.
Unfortunately, I don't think that they would necessarily be that effective, because so much development is farmed out to other regions.
Yeah.
That like
the games would just go down in quality. You know, it'd be like hiring scabs to do, you know, the work that the strikers are doing or not doing.
Yes.
Right, because like basically every major US publisher has a subsidiary in Asia or in Canada or you know, in Europe somewhere, where they can basically say, okay, instead of having, you know, Rockstar LA develop this game, I'm just going to give it to Rockstar North or Rockstar...
Isn't Rockstar North in, like, Colorado, though?
No, Rockstar North is in, like, Edinburgh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Or somewhere in
Sorry, Colorado. I was thinking of Blizzard North.
Yeah.
No.
I agree with that, too, and that's one of the main problems with the... one of the problems without a union, if we don't have a union, is that at any time they can go and start farming out, and developers do go and farm out to other countries. So what I think our issue is with fair treatment in that sense, but at the same time, unions have a way of supporting minimum work ethic, which is a trouble, too. So... in the end, I don't know if there's much of a solution for it, but at the same time, developers, programmers aren't complaining that much about their current situation. Some of them are at certain places, EA occasionally, but other than that, I don't know if it's that huge of a deal.
And with that in mind, we're going to go ahead and take our first break. When we come back, we're talking about the news, so stay tuned. Alrighty, folks, and we're back for the news. First up, VC Mondays. Super Mario Bros. 3 on the NES is the standout title this week,
which
I believe.
Nintendo proclaims as the best video game of all time in their press release, which I think is ballsy of them to say when the best video game of all time is clearly Nintendo's own Super Metroid.
Well, I would have to disagree, but my picks for best video game of the of all time are too niche and too obscure. At least
they I think Nintendo might be... I think Nintendo's basing their claim off of sales data.
Right.
Yeah, and if they want to do that, that's fine. I'll tell you what, I don't think that anything, completely off topic, I don't think anything can match the experience of playing Grim Fandango on the PC.
Is that your favorite game of all time?
It's one of them. It's like top three. That and Gunstar Heroes and then something else. I don't know. So
Gunstar Heroes.
Wow, Gunstar Heroes.
Yeah.
It's good. I didn't know you thought it was that good.
Okay, but here's the other thing. Alien Soldier, personally, and I think this goes for a lot of people, is... the game to download this week, and not Super Mario Bros. 3. I honestly think that. I think that Alien Soldier is superb.
It's like brutally hard, right?
Oh, it's hard. There's two
it's
options.
Treasure, so.
It's either super easy or super hard. It actually says super on it. Super easy, super hard. So
you... Is super easy actually super easy?
No, it's not. It's medium.
It's medium. Medium at best.
Yeah, at best. There's 25 stages.
But super medium doesn't really make sense, so...
Yeah. There's 25 stages. The way the game works is that each of the stages is very, very short, and the stage really is just a boss. And so the boss is the whole reason that you play the game. And that's Gunstar Heroes and Sin and Punishment, Mischief Makers, all had awesome bosses. And Treasure, I call in my review, I call Treasure... one of the best video game developers of all time. And I stand by that because I think that they are great at taking these action genres, these short games, and making them practically perfect. And I don't think that they should be knocked down for the fact that they also do third-party Bleach stuff, and they do...
I gave Bleach a good score.
Well, I mean, okay, so maybe it's good. And then they did 8.5. The Wario game on the GameCube, so stuff like
that.
Oh, yeah, that. Sometimes their licensed stuff doesn't live up to their quality, but when they get their own freedom, they make pretty much just ultimate, ultimate games. So
mm-hmm.
I wholeheartedly recommend Alien Soldier, and you can get more detail in my review if you'd like.
Okay.
And last up here, Power Golf on the TurboGrafx-16.
No one cares.
It's a bad game.
TurboGrafx-16 has completely blown its load on the virtual console.
Yeah.
So we've got nothing left.
It's blown its battle load.
Runner.
Yeah.
Get it.
No, I get it. It just wasn't that funny, so.
I tried. All right, well, I'm going to try to cover up the fact that I made a bad joke by moving on to the real news.
Yes.
And first up, nights to feature Wii Weather Channel, My Dream Mode, also features shitty graphics.
Wow.
indeed.
And
so this is this the Weather Channel is integrated into this My Dream Mode.
Yeah, basically you go into My Dream Mode, which is like you can go on collecting like things around Nightopia.
Ooh, collecting. That sounds collecting, like fun.
Talking to the Nightopians, which look like little Animal Crossing characters, I guess.
Okay, so this is Sega once again adding a feature to their game that's supposed to make it better, but will actually
but
just make it worse.
Well, the big problem here is that the weather data is going to be like 12 hours behind because the Wii Weather Channel sucks.
Yeah, the Wii Weather Channel is useless.
Yeah, okay, here's the best part, though. Literally, almost all of the assets, or a lot of the assets in this 3D game, 2D. 2D Lightning in 2007, really? Sonic Team USA, really?
Well, only Carl would bring up the fact that the Lightning is two-dimensional.
I mean, come on. Are you really going to give me 2D in 2007?
Knights doesn't look like a very good game, in terms of graphics at least. It could have good gameplay.
No, here's the thing, though, because in the regular game, Knights doesn't look that bad. It looks actually kind of decent.
Decent, I'll give it. I'll give it decent in terms of Wii, but I just don't think that it's going to blow anybody's socks off. And My Dream Mode featuring terrible graphics, big surprise, you know? It's like the Chao mode from the, or if you're supposed to pronounce it Chao, from Sonic Adventure.
Chao, I think.
Chao, yeah. That is a supposedly actually fairly decent portion of the game, but it just distracts from the main adventure, which itself was distracting from itself. So that's
right.
What's going to happen in Knights 2, is there's going to be all kinds of tangents, because that's what Sega does, is tangents. So
I just can't believe Sonic Team USA is making a bad game after the awesome Shadow the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
It's a big surprise. The whole world is kind of in stunned by that.
Bizarro world. Anyway.
Yeah.
Alright, moving on to our next story. Target is pulling Manhunt 2 off the shelves.
Apparently, there's some sort of hack that enables you to get the extra gory content back in the game or something.
In the PSP version. But here's the thing, though. Because the ESRB issued a statement today saying that even if they were to judge the game based on this super gory version that's unlockable in the PSP version, it would still be an M-rated game.
Well,
what?
That's BS.
That's
so
dumb.
What did they cut out?
Leading us to the question then, if they could still cut it out and still have an M-rated game, why did they cut it out?
Yeah. And here's the other thing.
It was political.
The other part of the ESRB's statement was that because of the fact that it was player unlocked content, that is not due to hacking. It's not something that should change the ESRB rating, which just shows
these people. That's the exact opposite of what they said when Hot Coffee came out.
Yes, exactly. So it just proves that there is a very political. The ESA is a good organization, but the ESRB, they're making a couple of mistakes when it comes to these hot Rockstar titles, and I really think that they just had to pull their heads out of their asses for a minute and really kind of stand up to people like Target.
They need to make up. So they're saying player unlocked content in Manhunt 2 is not reviewable for a rating, but content that is literally modified into a game and not put there by the developer originally can still count against it?
Well, according to what I read, and this was at GamePolitics.com, they're actually stating that the content that was in Grand Theft Auto was complete in and of itself. And
yeah, it was in there. Yeah, you're right. That was in there and it was unlocked by players, but it wasn't unlocked like through some gameplay mechanic. It was, they had to hack it to get that content out.
I know. I totally agree. To me, there is no difference between this and Manhunt and the man's situation there. So
Ridiculous. Target
is pulling it off the shelves. Soon Walmart might pull it off the shelves because it's a political action to say we don't support violent games, and that's stupid and it's not appropriate, but nonetheless.
Come buy a copy of Call of Duty 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can buy actual guns at Walmart.
Yeah, well, you used to.
They pulled those out?
They buy ammo still.
Yeah. No, they Walmart has a or they I, maybe they just got rid of the sell of bullets, but they stopped there because of Michael Moore. They actually stopped their sale of guns, I think.
Well, now I have no reason to go.
So really, I think that we're tired of this. I think gamers are tired of this. They want not. Most of us aren't playing Manhunt 2. Most of us are saying Manhunt 2 looks terrible. Manhunt 2 looks like a bad game. That it would make us sick, and that it's a sensationalist product, and it doesn't look very fun. So why would we go buy it? Target's pulling it off the shelves as a way of making some sort of statement, and the rest of us gamers are saying, "Well, good for you. We weren't buying it anyways."
Yeah,
there you go.
Ridiculous.
Next story here. Midway is having Wii troubles. Due to the amazing sales of the Wii console, production capacity is being lowered, and thus some of Midway's titles might be understocked, such as the awesomely bad Cruisin' USA for Wii.
Yeah, this game looks like a DS game running on a Wii. Like literally, if you said this is a DS game, I would say that is very believable, and those are pretty damn good graphics for a DS game.
But then you're like, oh wait, this is a Wii game in 2007.
2007. This game is horrendous looking. It's got aliasing all over the place.
Yeah.
Terrible textures, low polygon counts, like flat 2D backgrounds.
2D.
Really, in 2007.
In 2007.
Funniest really thing about
bad,
this is that
bad looking game.
That looked bad when they put it on the N64.
Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah, this game looks like a top tier N64 game.
Is this a port of the N64 game?
I think it could be.
Maybe it is, and that's
why. Very possible.
And maybe it could be that they've got the system wrong. Like they'll later announce, they'll say, "Oops, sorry, this wasn't for the Wii at all. This is for the DS. Fooled you."
Whoopsies. So yeah, sorry Midway, but you are just a pile of suck as far as
excuses.
Yeah.
So sorry. Yeah, maybe you're being understocked because your games are bad. That's a possibility.
That would be nice if the production problems were actually due to the fact that the machines could not handle the sucky content of the games.
Exactly. You can't print death on a disc. But moving on to our last story here, there was a Japanese Q&A recently with Satoru Iwata, and they asked him when the DS successor is going to come out, and he says he doesn't know because the DS is just doing so good. Why announce a successor? I guarantee that they're working on one. They're probably working on one somewhere.
Actually, Supergirl has already reported that. She says that it's scheduled for late 2009, and they can definitely ride the DS that long because the DS, in terms of 3D, no one expects a lot, and two-dimensional graphics, the sky's the limit. So, and you can do whatever you want with the DS.
And the successor will clearly be backwards compatible with DS games.
It's going to have to be. I don't know how it couldn't.
Yeah, it's
Evan, explain to people who Surfer Girl is in case they don't know.
Oh, Surfer Girl is a rumor monger who is apparently works within the industry, says that she actually is a female, which kind of narrows her down to, like, you know, five people.
Unless she's lying.
Yeah, unless she's lying. But she's extremely reliable with her rumors. And just look up Surfer Girl in Google and you'll be able to pull up her blog, which is a very bare bones blog that has lots of information, most of which ends up getting proven true. Some of the recent things that she's mentioned are that Beyond Good and Evil 2 is in production. That's one of the rumors that she's posted. She's also said that
it's in production under the helm of Michel Ancel, no less.
Yes, which is very good news. So, also, Nintendo...
I don't know how many synonyms there are for lame.
Yeah, well, just because you're stupid doesn't mean you should inflict it upon all of us.
You're absolutely insane if you don't think Beyond Good and Evil was good.
Yeah, you really. So anyways, another rumor that she recently posted is that Nintendo's working on 30 different WiiWare titles right now, two of which are Zelda spinoffs. So we could actually start seeing, instead of after the Virtual Console runs out of Zelda games, which is going to happen soon, then we could see
you never know when they're going to add Philips CDI support, okay?
Yeah.
Three more games.
True. Wow, Sklens. Way to go with that one.
Do you think as far as Zelda goes, do you think they would ever release downloadable content for Twilight Princess?
No, because there's no downloadable content, like hooks built into the game.
You don't know that?
There's not, dude.
I'm just saying.
I don't know how
they barely had enough time to finish it.
Yeah, but what I think is most interesting is that the fact that they might, instead of doing a two-dimensional Zelda for the DS or even for the Wii, where two-dimensional games could see a resurgence in the way that they saw on the PS2, they might do it on the WiiWare so that you can actually just download it for $10, $15, $20. So I think that that's totally reasonable and frankly exciting. So those are the rumors of Surfer Girl. She's got a lot of other stuff across the industry.
She says there's like 3 Wario games in development right now.
Which yeah, there's probably a new WarioWare, probably another like Wario like DS platformer or something like that.
I mean, I'm sure.
And then it's plausible.
Yeah. She's got a lot of comments about other people within the industry. She does interviews with other people, and she refuses to do interviews in print unless it's available right away, because she says that print is a dead medium, and we need to move on to the internet as our source of information.
When it comes to games, print is definitely a dead medium.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is SoftRockHallelujah at SoftRockHallelujah.blogspot.com if you want to check that out, and if you know how to spell Hallelujah.
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 There you go.
What was I saying?
You were saying hallelujah.
Hallelujah? Yeah. It's been a long day. And unlike Glenn's, I wasn't able to have my burritos.
He's Jewish and Arabic and Palestinian and
hallelujah.
German.
Hallelujah.
And all those other nationalities. So he's kind of got trouble.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Too many inflections.
So, according to Surfer Girl, the summary there is that the DS, he says he doesn't know. BS. Of course Iwata knows
course
when the
knows.
DS
successor his company. If he didn't know, he would not be doing a good job at all.
Yeah, no. He just doesn't know how long the DS is going to last. That's all he's saying. So, they're working on something. Within a year, we're going to know what it is. That's all it is.
I'm going to say 2010, but that's just my bet.
It could get pushed. We'll see.
All right, so that actually closes up our new segment. We come back, we're talking about Mario. Stay tuned. All right, folks, and we're back for our feature segment. We're talking about the Mario. All right, anyway. By the time you get this, Mario Galaxy will only be like 3 or 4 days away. So
we figured we'd give you a little, you know,
retrospective
history.
Our times with the Mario. I don't think we need to talk about Donkey Kong, the original arcade cabinet, because that's not really a Mario game.
Most people
Mario
didn't
was,
play it
Mario
much.
Was Mario was named after the guy who ran Nintendo's storage facility in, like, northern New Jersey.
Yeah. I mean by when I say that not a lot of people played Donkey Kong much is that, of course, it was very popular in its time, but today the people that you'll hear talking about it are in their late 20s, early 30s. Obviously not us. The large segment of gamers between the ages of 12 and 27 probably didn't have a lot of experience with Donkey Kong. So,
well, I had a decent amount, but yeah, most people, most gamers, I'd say, didn't come in to Mario until Super Mario Brothers in the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah, absolutely.
That game was just absolutely huge.
I've got a story about Super Mario Brothers. Not myself. Of course, I played it when I was very, very young. One of those first video game experiences. I have cousins who are way into video games, and they're 10, 15 years older than me. And
I must have been like 6 or 7 when Super Mario Brothers came out.
Yeah. My cousins, though, were there on day one. They said they went into Fred Meyer to try and get the consoles. And what they actually found was that, this is interesting to me, to know that this happened in the 80s. People were picking up the Nintendo Entertainment System, and they were putting 3 or 4 in a cart. It was, he says that it was a madhouse. He was 10 years old when it happened. He was watching people just go nuts for the thing, and that, and you know, of course, it cost like $200, $250, so,
And they weren't selling them on eBay either.
Yeah. So people were just buying them. They were going crazy, and so he always recounts that to me as kind of his, what started it all, is Super Mario Brothers, absolutely.
Right. When Super Mario Bros. First came out in, I believe it was 85, I was -4 at the time.
I was 2, so I guess I didn't play Mario Brothers until a couple years later. I must have been like 5 or 6 when we got Nintendo Entertainment
System.
So
by the time I got into the Mario games, they were already retro, kind of. So I was already playing them in my, you know, post-adolescence ironic phase. But, no, I think my first...
Post-adolescence?
Well,
you're still in your adolescence, dude.
Don't ruin the jokes. Anyway, so when I first got introduced to Mario, it was actually Super Mario Land on the Game Boy. I was up in Binghamton, New York, visiting my my cousin Adam, and he had one of those game bricks, and he had the Super Mario Land cart, and I was hooked on it for like 4 days, and I think that was really like my first real introduction to Mario. And of course, I you know, later on I would play Super Mario Brothers, and then.
I'm trying to remember
Super Mario
now.
3,
I can't remember what my first Mario game was. It must have been Super Mario Brothers 3. I mean, I know I owned and played Super Mario Brothers 2? When do you?
Is it sacrilege that I've never finished Super Mario Bros. 3?
I never beat it. I couldn't do it.
No, most people understand that game in kind of a we've got some hardcore Mario fans on the forums. They might disagree, but I don't think it's necessary. It's a hard game.
I've played it and I've gotten reasonably far in it, but I just never got around to finishing. It's a good game. I like it.
Yeah.
I could never beat it. I could never beat Super Mario Bros. My mom was better at Super Mario Bros. than I was. She got to world like 8-1 and couldn't finish it.
Yeah. I think it's funny that you brought up Super Mario Land, because I wonder how many gamers out there actually started with the Game Boy, because it was cheaper to get than an NES, and you got similar experiences. I played Super Mario Land, Super Mario Land 2, and Super Mario
Land
3.
Damn good games.
These are the Mario Land games are fantastic, and we segued into Wario, also fantastic.
Yeah. Wario, see, first game.
Any of these games. I never had a Game Boy.
Well, Super Mario Land, if you ever get a chance to play it, is very, very good.
Yeah.
So Super Mario Land is almost like Super Mario Brothers, but like give it to the team who just wants to try crazy shit. Mm-hmm. Because they really, like, the first one was very, you know, by the book Mario, but the second one and the third one especially are very, like, crazy.
They get really impressive, and those games are kind of lost because they didn't make colorized versions of them, or if they did, they didn't, you know, they were just part of the package and no one's really paying attention, and they never did any sort of remake for the Game Boy Advance, so those games need to find another venue to get re-released, I think, because they're fantastic.
I would buy a Super Mario Land, like, Classic Edition, bundle all three games, put them on the DS, I'm down for that.
Oh my gosh.
I'm on that.
I am too. And also the Wario games. The Wario games were also fantastic because it introduced very interesting gameplay elements with transformations, with breaking things. It was a different kind of action game. Wario worked in a different way than Mario. And so I think that the Game Boy was also the introduction of Kirby for a lot of people. So really, the side-scroller has had just as much life on the handheld from the beginning, and the fact that it's kind of died on the consoles to a certain degree and is still living on the handheld is not, to me, a bad thing at all, because it was always there. So Mario, New Super Mario Brothers being the Mario game for the last few years...
Yeah, but I didn't think New Super Mario Bros. We were talking about that. I don't think that game was that great. It was very good. It was great in some respects, but it was too easy and it was too short.
Well, yeah, I don't want to get into the actual quality of the game. I'm just saying, in terms of having the Mario game be on a handheld, is I think
that was a good move by Nintendo, and it was nice that they went and made it really old school and it has all the old Super Mario Bros. Original, like, really floaty jump physics and stuff like that. I thought that was great that they really went totally old school with it.
Yeah, I agree. And I also like the fact that the Super Paper Mario game went two-dimensional as well. Even though it wasn't totally a successful experiment, I think that that HAL can take that and run with it. So,
I think the Paper Mario games are probably not only the worst thing Intelligent Systems has ever been associated with, but... probably, if you ask me, the black sheep of the Mario franchise.
Well, I'm once again, I don't know like you host the podcast at all, but no, I disagree. I think that the Paper Mario RPGs are a little bit better than Super Paper Mario, but if Intelligent Systems is committed to taking the idea of a Paper Mario as far as it possibly can, then I would say let them keep going with this two-dimensional idea. It worked to a degree. And I want them to keep trying,
Well, you know, speaking of the Mario RPGs, I didn't play much of Legend of the Seven Stars, just because...
Legend of the Seven Stars is really good. It plays off a lot of really great RPG conventions that just makes it really clever.
Yeah.
But I did play a lot of the GBA game, Superstar Saga, which is, if you ask me...
That game is great.
Leagues above Paper Mario.
Oh, yeah, I think I would agree that... Mario and Luigi is way better than Paper Mario any week.
I don't have any experience with the Mario and Luigi games, actually, so I couldn't comment.
Oh, I can't speak to the quality of Partners in Time. I didn't play
Partners in Time was really good. I'll let you borrow my copy. It's great.
Okay, I heard that it was not as good as Superstar Saga.
It might be. I think it's on the same level at the very least.
But Superstar Saga is great. The battle system is pretty action-oriented. It's action-oriented enough to keep you into the battles. And the writing is brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really what makes the Paper Mario games, too, is the writing. But the writing in the Superstar Saga games, I think, is even better. And the games are faster paced, so you get through it.
Yeah. Alpha Dream, love them.
We focused a little bit much here on the spin-offs.
Side games.
We've totally skipped over Super Mario World, which I thought was like the most incredible game I'd ever played when I first, you know, when you drop into that first level in Super Mario World and all of a sudden the giant bullet bill covers up the entire screen and you're like, oh my god, video games cannot get any better than this.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely a pretty game, but it's a very pretty game.
It's also the introduction of Yoshi.
Super Mario World goes a lot of great places, and it is one of those penultimate classics, but I think that the debate between Super Mario World and Super Mario Bros. 3 is very valid. I think the Super Mario Bros. 3 is a very much a classic experience and is the predecessor to Mario World. And
yeah, if you put them on the same platform with the same engine, I think Super Mario Bros. 3 would be the better game.
Overall, because of level design, the action gameplay, short levels, which I love, and I've heard Super Mario Galaxy, this is something from Jeremy Parrish's very controversial but very well-written and accurate review of Super Mario Galaxy, that Galaxy has a short level scheme similar to Super Mario Bros. 3.
And
which
apparently
I think
it gets
bitching
hard towards the end, which I'm very excited about.
That's good news as well. So,
but the best part about that is what I've heard is that, yeah, it does have levels that are just going to kick your ass over and over again, but most of those levels, optional. So if you suck
that's how Mario has always been.
If you suck at platformers, you can still finish the game without too much trouble.
Like you can get through Super Mario 64 or Super Mario Sunshine, you can get through those with the 60-star minimum in like no time at all, no sweat. But when you start going for the other half of those stars, it starts getting pretty difficult. And
that's
really great.
That's really worth mentioning about the Mario experience is that Nintendo has really kept the games linear in terms of progression, but open. So that you do get choices about which levels you get to play.
And that's been going on since Super Mario Bros. 3, really. You know, there have always been a couple of levels that you could skip. Like, there was that one level in World 3 with the sun that you could completely bypass if you wanted to.
I would almost say that Super Mario Bros., thanks to the warping, has some of that similar aspect.
Yeah.
And Super Mario Bros. 2 even has it to a certain degree because of the fact that each of the levels is very complex. So
the difference there, though, I think the warping in the original Super Mario Bros. Is more of an aspect because there's no way to save your game if you want to get back to the point where you were. That's what the warps are really there for.
Sure,
I agree. They're there to let you skip over parts of the game, but only because so you won't have to play them again.
Yeah.
Right. I think, you know, when you get to Mario 3, where you get to the points in the game where the game's got a battery, so it knows where you are at all times, but you get to certain levels that you can completely skip and go around, you know, that's sort of like, you know, only earning 60 stars in Super Mario 64 or Sunshine, you know. That's what Nintendo is very good about, especially with the Mario game, is very good about making the difficulty selection almost like completely seamless, where you don't start the game and say, I want to play on easy or I want to play on medium.
Mm-hmm.
You just set it yourself, like, I want to get all 120 stars. Well, that's playing on expert, you know.
Absolutely.
And I only want to beat it. Well, that's playing on easy, you know.
And I will go and expose myself as one of those not so talented Mario players, at least in the 3D realm. I have not gotten all the stars in Super Mario 64.
I've not
gotten all the shines in Super Mario Sunshine, although I think I got closer in Sunshine.
I want to say I got around 100 in Sunshine.
I'm close to that. I might be at 95 to 100, but I think that's really a tribute to Nintendo's skill is in balancing that difficulty. Unlike Zelda, where you really have to, because every area pertains to the story, and the story is tied to everywhere you go, narrative is not as important to Super Mario, yet at the same time, we must admit that narrative was Nintendo's innovation. For being called the people that ignore story, Donkey Kong had a story, and that's what kept that game a little bit more vibrant and alive for a lot of people. Super Mario Bros. Has a story, yet the story does not pertain to this gameplay, which is abstract. And the gameplay that you actually get is, and that's why I think Galaxy really could be it, is that they may have some sort of story excuse for why everything's up in the sky, but it is abstract. You are running around on bizarre objects, and it doesn't really make any sense.
It's pure platform.
It would appear that someone has read Chris Kohler's Power-Up.
Actually, I'm just a fan of Chris Kohler's philosophies of narrative, but I haven't actually read the book. Chris is a great guy.
You should read the book. It's very good.
We like him here on Radio Free Nintendo, so I suppose plugging his book is not a bad thing to do.
It's a good book. I read it and very much enjoy it.
I am personally not a fan of Super Mario Sunshine's philosophy of level design, where everything kind of fits within this world, where there's a waterfall, there's a city, there's a town, there's an amusement park.
Yeah, but then you get to those abstract you know, pure platforming levels where you go inside the pipe and all of a sudden it's, you know, you're floating in like a, literally, you know, in a void with just a whole bunch of blocks, and it's just pure platforming, and it's just the most satisfying part of Mario Sunshine, or those levels. It's like the Bowser levels in Mario 64. There's three of those, and those are like pure platforming. You just run through the obstacle course, and it's totally abstract, and it's not tied to any level design or anything. And Mario Sunshine takes those Bowser levels, and you get even more of them, and they are the best part of Mario Sunshine, and I'm looking forward to something similar in Mario.
Well, what I get, the impression I get is that Mario Galaxy is actually very abstract in that same way, and that it is pure platforming, and that even in the main levels, and that's at least my desire for it, and I hope that it achieves that, even though it also is balancing that with some of the planets. Even though they are floating in the sky, they're going to be flat on the top. So you wander around them like you would a level in Super Mario 64 or Super Mario Sunshine, but then you jump off of it and all of a sudden you're just kind of in this abstract world that's off to the side. I think it really could honestly be definitely game of the year. I mean, we're Nintendo fans, we're going to get hyped for it, and we can make stupid statements like that, but it could be one of the best Mario games of all time. Sure. Especially after having played at E3.
Yeah, after playing at E3, it's just there's so many brand new concepts in there, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the new Tokyo studio are the guys that did it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a brand new studio, they're young, they like doing really innovative stuff, and it really shows from just the little I've played of Mario Sunshine and seen of it, it really shows of Galaxy, yes, I'm sorry. It really shows that they are willing to take this in a completely new direction, and they are not afraid to completely blank the canvas and start from scratch.
I would say that one of the greatest faults of Super Mario 64, which is a fantastic game, don't get me wrong, is that you can fall off of the levels. In order to retain that platforming feeling...
Well, apparently you can fall off the levels in Galaxy.
Really? That's strange.
There are some levels you can fall off of, and then there are some levels that if you jump too close to a black hole, it is essentially the same as falling off of it.
Okay. Because you get sucked into the black hole. That's really interesting. Because they seem to have solved the problem of that, and I feel like Sunshine, in trying to address the idea of falling off the level, which you can only really do in the bonus levels in Sunshine, I feel like they have a really large debt to Banjo-Kazooie. Because Banjo-Kazooie came out right after Super Mario 64 and had this idea of a world, and that you're platforming in a level, and the level is you're not something you can fall off of. You're going to be next to a mountain, or you're going to be in the ocean and on an island, and there's not like a gap that falls to nowhere anywhere in that game. That is what the Sunshine developers took, and they took that, unless you get really high up on a level and you fall down and die off of that, they never have it so that you just fall into nowhere unless you're in a bonus level. I hope they Galaxy has some of that too.
When you're in outer space, obviously you're surrounded by nowhere. So, but most of the time, the gravity of the level will keep you there, but there are situations where if you jump too close to a black hole, it is akin to falling off the level.
So I think it might be a good balance between those two sides of Mario platforming.
Totally. Well, guys, we've had an interesting discussion here on the various Mario games. So before we go, why don't we just go around the room and say what our favorite Mario games are. You can pick a spin-off if you like. You don't have to pick one of the main games. And Evan, I'm going to start with you.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and do two. I'm going to do a main Mario game as well as a...
spin-off?
As well as a spin-off, yeah, because Super Mario 64 is a classic. It's only really a classic if you know Mario, and if you've seen where Mario's gone since then. I think that in retrospect, Super Mario 64, even with its imperfect control scheme and imperfect camera...
But it wrote the book on 3D platforms.
It really did. It wrote the book, and even with all of its flaws, I think is one of the best video games of all time, and is definitely the best Mario platformer. At least in the 3D realm, for sure, but two-dimensional as well. And other than that, as far as spin-offs, Super Mario RPG is my absolute favorite. And those two games came out at the same time, and that may just be me and my nostalgic kind of... That was when I was growing up. Those were some of my first video games. But those two were very important to me as a gamer and defined my tastes.
They were only about a year apart, weren't they?
RPG was a late Super NES game.
Right. And then 64 was obviously like the first N64 game. So
yeah. September 2006.
Right. Yes. So yeah, that's an interesting choice. Super Mario RPG. I guess for me, it would be my favorite. I'm picking two spin-offs here, actually. My favorite Mario game, just for nostalgic value, is Super Mario Land on the Game Boy. And I guess as far as spin-off goes, I would have to either go with Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga, or Oddly enough, lately I've been playing a lot of Mario Strikers Charged.
That really should not count.
With enough alcohol, you can make that your favorite Mario game.
Okay, come on. If you're gonna pick, like, I think that we're
I'll go with Superstar Saga.
Good. That's good.
Okay. All right. What about you, Mike?
I'm gonna go against the grain, and I'm not sure if it's really like my favorite Mario game because they're all really good, but I really loved the hell out of Mario Sunshine, and I know it's like sort of almost a blasphemous pick in some people's eyes because of the whole squirting things with water aspect of it, but I really, really liked it. And what really made it for me was those platforming sections where you just got in there and you were just balls to the wall platforming, get it right or die and try again.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that aspect of it. Just get it right. I'm a perfectionist, so I really,
yeah.
I don't know, I really got into that aspect of it. And I just, the whole level design, I loved the whole like on vacation theme of it. I thought it was really good. Doesn't get anywhere near as much credit as it really deserved.
And even though I'm an outspoken critic of the game, I do have to say that some of the things within it are really, truly fantastic. And it's saying that it's a bad Mario game is like saying it's a bad Zelda game. It's stupid. It's not worth it to even say something
and
like
as
that.
As for spin-offs, I don't know. Am I allowed to pick Mario Kart DS? Or
Mario Kart DS is fantastic. Actually,
Mario Kart's too much of a franchise, I think, to be able to pick
it. Dude, I'm going with Mario Kart DS.
Mario Kart is too much of a franchise unto itself.
Yeah.
I totally forgot
about
Mario
Kart. But Mario Kart DS is the best Mario Kart game, bar none.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Bar none.
But
and you guys, why don't we
that,
play online more? If you guys like it, we should
know.
Play online.
We should. If I can't pick that, I will have to agree with Evan and say Super Mario RPG. I loved that game. So good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really is, and Square needs to revisit that. Honestly, I think that a sequel to Super Mario RPG by Square would be. Although Square's a different company than it was in 1995, so
they really are.
I don't know where that would go if they could do something that was.
Mario would have spiky Onuma hair.
Well, Onuma's gone. He's not even.
Yeah, but you know what? That hasn't stopped the character design.
Wait! Hold on a second. Onuma, you mean the guy from Zelda?
Oh no, I'm sorry.
You're thinking of Tetsuya Nomura, and you're thinking of Evan.
I was thinking of Nomura. I'm so sorry. I was thinking of Nomura, and you were
Sakaguchi.
No, Nomura is the guy. No, Nomura is the guy who designed Cloud Strife.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Sakaguchi.
He's still there.
Well, actually, Amano is the guy who designed the characters pre Final Fantasy VII.
Okay. We really want to get into the history of Square's design. I think we all have to go back to the designer of Chrono Trigger.
You mean Akira Toriyama? You mean the guy who did Blue Dragon?
Yes. I think that his character designs have influenced later Final Fantasy games more than anyone else.
Well, what was it? Is it Onuma? It's Onuma. Onuma was his protege.
No, Nomura was
Nomura. Fuck. Oh, I always get all these guys backwards.
This
Tetsuya
is really,
Nomura.
This is a
Tetsuya
valuable
Nomura
way for us to end the podcast.
Tetsuya Nomura, director of the
let's
Kingdom Hearts.
Let's just
Kingdom
cut
Hearts
this
games.
All out because it's not about Mario.
Yeah.
Save it
cut
for the
it.
Next show.
Cut it,
slice it.
And it's really terrible. I botched that like 12 times. I got that name wrong.
Yeah, you really did. Okay. So, if you have anything to, say to us, you can send that over to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And if you have a Mike's Crazy Mailbag question, include the password. How about clean is better than dirty?
There we go. Clean is better than dirty.
Yeah.
It's classic.
All right. So
I actually really like this podcast, guys, because we got more errors. We have more factual errors in it than we had factual accuracies.
And let me point out that none of them were mine.
This is a Sklens Birchfield podcast tradition. Get as many details wrong as possible.
Yeah, let's just get them all wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless you can't pronounce Hallelujah, does that count?
Although I guess maybe thinking Beyond Good and Evil is a bad game might be a factual.
That
accuracy.
Is a factual.
No, that is a factual error. Absolutely, it is
so,
a factual error.
There you go. So yeah, if you have any other emails, send us not related to Mike's Crazy Mailbag. It's also rfn@nintendoreport.com. Head on over to iTunes, review us, subscribe.
Go over to Dig
us. It's real simple. And I've seen that some of you guys have been digging us recently. We've gone up in the Dig numbers, so I appreciate that. And I believe that's it. We're done.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
We're cutting it down. Evan, thanks for stopping by.
Absolutely. One of these days we'll do a podcast from Florida so I can actually try your stupid gut sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You'll never leave.
Because it will give you a heart attack and you will die.
You will die here.
Sounds great.
All right. And all right, guys. See you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
Now, interesting to know, when Mario Brothers first came out, originally in I think it was like 85, or it might have been 86.
Are you talking about Mario Brothers or Super Mario
Super
Brothers?
Brothers? Super Mario Brothers. I think it came out in like 86, I believe, right?
No, it was later than that. I thought it was 89.
No, it was like 86, dude. Check it right now. He's checking on the internet.
We're going to re-record this bit, because I don't want to sound like a fucking idiot. I thought the NES came out in 89.
That should be the tag at
dude,
the end,
no!
Carl, the tag at the end should be Glenn saying that he doesn't want to sound like an idiot.
85.
Okay. So
wow, when I was like two.
Yeah. When Super Mario Brothers first came out.